exciting episode of Extra Features Interview. Today we have an awesome film called Being Awesome. So I hope everybody listening is being awesome today, because that's pretty much the motto of the film, is to be awesome 24/7. Director, writer, producer, star, casting director, maybe even the caterer, but we'll get into that. Alan C. Gardner's here. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So we can start off right at the beginning. Is being awesome something you want to be? Is this your motto? Where does this come from?
You know, I think the whole movie kind of stemmed from a few years back when I was feeling just a little down, a little just like feeling a little disillusioned about things. I just wasn't really appreciating like who I was and what I had accomplished, and you know, just myself as I should have been. So it kind of came from that place. Like, I was in a funk, and it was my way of working my way out of that funk. So, and I think the word awesome is just kind of like, and it's funny, now that I've made a movie called Being Awesome, I realize how often we all say awesome, like, to each other and whatnot. It's a fun, like, you know, it's a buzzword that kind of always will be, like, a buzzy word, I think, for a long time. So that one just popped into mind. Like, everyone wants to, on some level, feel awesome. And it's kind of like, the movie explores what that means to each individual person, because sometimes we're trying to chase some kind of whatever we perceive to be like the societally accepted definition of awesomeness, you know what I mean? Attaining certain benchmarks that would make other people look at us and be like, oh, that person's awesome. But really, that's all kind of nonsense at the end of the day, because we're all different. Different things make us feel fulfilled, so we should be listening to whatever it is that truly, you know, within us that will truly make us feel awesome, and then pursuing that. So yeah, the movie is, again, my way of just kind of, it's a little bit of therapy for sure, filmmaker therapy. And ever since I made it, I have genuinely felt more awesome. So there you go.
So you definitely state something right at the beginning that you should follow and be nice to everybody in this. And your two main characters, I guess it takes them a few minutes to figure that out at the beginning of the film. Lloyd's having a little more problem being awesome than Teddy. And I would say Teddy could be awesome if he knew how to get there.
Yeah. Fair enough. I mean, they're definitely each at different places, yeah, with their respective journeys there. I mean, I feel like Teddy is someone who, in high school, he had kind of achieved what, again, like, society at large perceives to be awesomeness. You know, he was a star athlete, very popular, you know, very, like, gregarious kind of guy. But it wasn't really, a lot of that was just, again, him kind of, and there's nothing wrong with any of that, of course, but he was trying too hard to chase whatever it was that he thought would make him happy. And whatever, like, he just wanted to be seen, it was more about how he wanted to be seen a certain way, and as opposed to, like, how he really, like, what would really fulfill him. So he kind of had, like, a bit of a hollow awesomeness, if you will, back in high school. But more to the point, he just kind of coasted from there. And just, I've known people who clung to their high school glory days, quote unquote, like, a little bit. And even, like, years after the fact, and just looking back on those days. And I liked high school, personally. I liked it fine. But I was very glad to, like, continue moving forward. And I don't know, I think that's something with my life. Like, I've realized, like, with every passing year, I genuinely do feel more fulfilled and I'm a happier person. So I kind of like getting older and just continuing to go out into the world. I don't look back, you know, with these rose-colored glasses and try to relive some, you know, past glories or whatnot. And then Lloyd is just someone who, yeah, it was more after high school when he married Lisa that he kind of had that sense of like, oh, now I'm awesome, especially in the eyes of the world. I'm with this wonderful woman. Now people will look at me as the guy who's like, you know, obviously good enough to marry this wonderful woman. But again, it's just kind of like a token sense of fulfillment. It wasn't actually, their neuroses were what were fueling them the entire time. And they never did really get a hold of their insecurities. So anyway, I went off on a tangent there.
Perfect. I love it. I want to discuss, as you watch the film, do you think they ever achieve their awesomeness, or they're still on that climb? Because I'll say it as we're watching it, they're on their way.
Yeah,
I don't think they get there by the end.
They're on their way. Like, what's most significant to me is that it's really, because everything in life comes down to perspective, right? And by the end of the movie, what's important is that their perspectives have shifted in a healthy way that, yeah, allows them to, like, it's no longer about, like, still not even about, like, being awesome, quote unquote. It's just about feeling okay with who you are and realizing that ultimately that's what, you know, leads to true awesomeness. And that's what, you know, when you go to bed at night will allow you to actually fall asleep as opposed to just constantly, like, you know, spinning your wheels. And I think we've all been there where some nights I just lay there and I'm just, like, thinking and overthinking things for a few minutes. I can't, like, settle down. Was the days where I felt like I really accomplished a lot and I really felt, like, connected to the people in my life. And those are the days that, you know, I'm able to fall asleep pretty easily, is one way of looking at it. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think it leaves them kind of like they're on their way to, yeah, to even more fulfillment and even more happiness.
I am going to get into the film a little bit more, but I want to go back to being an indie filmmaker. I do like to discuss your locations because I think that's a hard thing to get for you guys.
Yeah, I'm actually wearing a T-shirt for one of my locations right now, incidentally. I just kind of grabbed it and tossed it on.
Perfect. You have a school location, house location, reunion location, and you have a bar location, the four main ones.
Right.
So how do you get a school?
Man, we got a school through – so we filmed the movie – so I live in Los Angeles, but we filmed the movie in Memphis, which is where I'm from. And we got it through the Memphis Film Commission. It was like a series of emails, different – like originally we were going to try to shoot at Germantown High School. But basically it came down to, at the end of the day, I had some meetings, but at the end of the day, they just didn't want to have a film crew on their campus for whatever reasons. I can't remember exactly. Certain things, maybe with the script or whatnot. But we actually filmed at a Southwest Community College. Were very gracious to us. We just kind of like, you know, shot it as if it were a high school. There are a lot of things in certain locations like that where, you know, you have one thing in the script and then either you tailor the actual location that you get to kind of like meet those needs or you just change the location entirely and just roll with the punches. So, but yeah, the Memphis Film Commission helped out a lot, and it also helped that we'd shot a few other movies in Memphis before, so we'd kind of started developing somewhat of a, you know, a local, like, recognition for our stuff, so. But also, that's like, in Memphis, too, everyone's so, you know, a lot of people are so gracious and willing to, like, open their doors to you and are excited about you coming in to make a movie. It can be a little different in Los Angeles.
So, your house locations, where did you get those? It's the same place, the Memphis Film location?
To the house locations?
Yes.
Oh, the house locations, honestly, my parents' house, one of my best friend's parents' houses, my best friend's house, like a bunch of different, basically family and friends' houses around town.
So do you offer them free food or you kick them out or what do you do? Or they send them to the basement?
I know. It's always that delicate kind of dance of like, you know, because you want the set to be as, like, as quiet as possible and this, that, and the other. But you certainly don't want to, like, make people feel like they're kicked out of their homes. So we just kind of explain to people going in. It's like, okay, like, let them know what they're signing up for, basically. There's going to be X amount of people in your house. For the most part, you know, while we're rolling, everyone has to be quiet. So just, like, and some people are just excited about just, like, hanging back and watching that happen. And obviously we just try to, like, expedite things and wrap out of people's houses as quickly as possible. But yeah, offer them food. Like if they want to go out to eat or whatever, we'll take care of that. But sometimes they just want to like hang back and watch, which is fun.
I do also want to discuss, I did notice you did a Kickstarter at the end of your film. Yeah. You have a big long list of stuff. I didn't read your Indiegogo because I prefer the Kickstarter stuff. I find more fun usually.
Now,
some of your perks were, you're going to do a painting for the film.
Yeah.
Now, nobody took that perk, so I'm upset.
What was it?
You were going to paint a painting of likeness in the film.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had so one of the things early on in pre-production, I went out looking for an artist to basically serve as the actor who played Lloyd, my friend Drew Smith, wasn't a painter, wasn't an artist. So we found someone basically to be his artist stand-in, if you will, and create his paintings. And same with the character of Blake. So I found this guy, great guy, Robert Wolverton Jr., Memphis guy. And so, yeah, he had agreed to help us out with that perk. Did that perk get – I don't think anyone claimed that perk, though.
Nobody did, but I liked it. And I also
– yeah, I'm glad you liked that one.
My favorite perk is the $5,000 perk he made up.
Oh, yeah, that one didn't get claimed.
No, but I wanted to, I was hoping that one would get claimed because I wanted to know more about this short film that I could make up about any topic I wanted.
Oh, wow, that's right. Oh, boy. Well, if only you'd been around back then and had $5,000 to spare.
I just thought that was funny. So were you really prepared to write a short film? on any topic.
Yeah, with this movie, like, with all my stuff, like, I'm pretty much prepared to do whatever it takes to make it happen. And with being awesome, like, you know, the fundraising, like, we looked for funds for a while. And basically for me, like, I was telling a friend of mine this the other day, you know, when I start budgeting my films, you do that early on because I want to know exactly what I need to make the movie so then I can go about attaining all of those things. So I create my high-end budget, you know what I mean? Like, this is the ideal budget. I pursue that. Then then I also have, like, a low-end budget. I'm like, if I have to make it, like, the least amount possible, this is what it's going to be. And then I have a mid-budget, too, somewhere in between. Anyway, with being awesome, I had to wind up going with the low-end budget, basically because I didn't want to wait any longer to make it. So when it came to, like, the Kickstarter and whatnot, I'm like, man, to get, like, a few grand extra just to help, because, you know, I basically wind up maxing out all the credit cards and, you know, doing that usual route, which worked out well. But, yeah, I was willing to do pretty much whatever it took. So, yes, I was prepared to write that short film. Anything to make that movie happen.
So let's go back to your film. How do you approach a painter about painting? Like, you have maybe 10 paintings in the film, I'd like to say.
There are a lot. Yeah, there's even more than that. Okay. Yeah, it's close. What was it? Maybe close to 20?
So you ask him, can I borrow these, or how does that work?
Well, it was interesting. So it's kind of like, you know, when collaborating with musicians sometimes, where, especially like a composer, I'll give them, you know, while talking about the themes with them, talking about certain pieces that I want for each, you know, for each character, for each scene, what have you. And so it was kind of cool, like, taking that on with a painter and kind of, like, discussing Lloyd's psyche with him. And there are certain paintings, basically all the paintings I had, like, some sort of, like, description of, like, a succinct description of them, like, in the script. Like, I knew essentially what I wanted them to be. So I took these to this painter. I honestly can't remember, like, it was a mutual friend who put us in touch with him. But anyway, really nice guy. And he was very excited about it and wanted to be involved. So he and I would just meet up and discuss each of the paintings, what was going on with Lloyd at the time that he created them, and, like, what I was trying to convey through the paintings. And, of course, I wanted to give him some artistic liberty as well, like, wanted him to have fun with it. So it was a nice, like, collaboration. I really enjoyed that. I'm going to write more movies about artists, about painters.
And let's go back to your film for a second. You write that Lisa's dating a chef that makes cookies.
He's a classic cookie chef. You know how it goes.
No, actually, I want to know how many chefs you've met that makes cookies and calls himself a chef. A baker, I can let go.
That's a good point. Well, he makes more than just cookies, but it's the cookies that are called in the movie. And the funny thing about the cookies line is that was an ad-lib by Gabe, my dear friend and producing partner Gabe, who plays Jasper. And we just got done talking about, like, oh, what is he making inside right now? And we're, like, listed off a few things, and cookies being one of them. And then we're out there shooting the scene, and he just goes, like, cookies or whatever. I'm like, fair enough. I like it. We'll keep it. But, yeah, I like that attention to detail.
So I do pay attention, and I'm like, this guy, I don't know why Lisa's dating him. He sounds like a hipster making cookies. He needs to go. Like, if I was Lloyd, I would not speak to him. And Lloyd wants to be buddies with him out in the film. I'm like, buddy, he's a hipster. This is not your zone.
He's going to let me again. Lloyd's learning to be the bigger person, as it were, and trying to, you know, cast aside all pettiness and jealousy. And, you know, it works out pretty well for him. But initially in the film, like, when he finds out about Jasper, even his name, he dismisses his name, which I think, you know, isn't right. But he's pretty jealous at the time.
So. Well, I have to agree with Lloyd.
I like that.
I would dismiss Jasper, too. Who's named Jasper? Like, how many Jaspers do you meet on a regular day? I'm like, Jasper, well, no way.
Okay. I named him Jasper for a reason. So I understand where you're coming from. I've never met a Jasper. Hopefully any Jaspers out there right now aren't deeply offended, unsettled by this commentary. I certainly mean no harm to all the Jaspers.
Well, maybe I do.
You too, though, apparently. Jaspers and hipsters making cookies.
Yeah, that's cool. What I'm looking for. He can come on my show and talk to me about his cooking chef recipe, and we'll get into it.
Excellent.
You have a lot of extras I also have noticed in your scenes. I mean, in the high school, you have a full set of students, not like two, like 20 maybe. At the New Year's Eve party, you have people. At the reunion, there's people.
I know.
So how'd you corral them?
Man, that's a good question. I mean, basically, again, like, we made posts through through Memphis Film Commission, just Facebook posts, and a lot of it was just like friends coming in, family members coming in, and then friends of our friends and family members. We just kind of kept putting the word out. And so, yeah, that is like having to gather all those extras and then coordinate with them and everything can be a little daunting, especially on a very, very low budget film in the grand scheme. So again, a lot of people coming out and just being sweethearts and doing us a favor, and we would give, you know, food, drinks, what have you. But yeah, it's basically a lot of people doing us a big favor. And then of course, like in party scenes and reunion scenes, not that I want anyone to look for this stuff, but basically you move around people as you need to in order to fill each frame, obviously. So we try to basically take whatever extras we had and make it look like we had way more than we actually had.
Well, it looks good. I like that. I like how it all worked together. I thought it would look – I think it added to the film, I guess. Gave it some depth, which is good. I also want to ask, Lloyd goes over to Lisa and Jasper's house. He doesn't get a drink? Who doesn't drink?
Wait, he doesn't
– They don't offer him a drink. And I was kind of like, buddy, it's time to go. The hipster's making the cookies. You ain't getting a drink.
Oh, so when he goes over that first time.
Yeah, and every other time they're not drinking. So was this a plan not to drink?
No. The drinking thing, I guess that was unintentional. I mean, there's the one scene where they came back from karaoke. Oh, Jasper was having a beer. They were having a beer. There was one scene where they're having a beer. This is when the cracks start to show a little bit. When Jasper's telling Lloyd, like, you know, that he was intimidated of Lloyd because...
Yes.
Lloyd was kind of like this guy, like, you know, and it started to, yeah, that's when Lloyd's brain starts to gradually unravel, and he starts to realize, or feel like this might not be the best idea. But yeah, they just come back from karaoke, and they each had a beer. There you go. They were drinking.
Okay, but you could argue Teddy's having a drink in the bar when he's hanging out with his buddy.
Well, Teddy drinks a lot more, yeah.
But I'm looking at Teddy in the bar, and he's drinking, looks like a Diet Coke. So I got a question. What were you drinking in the bar?
Diet Coke, probably.
Because it looks like I'm looking at it going,
alcohol consumed in the making of this movie. I probably tried to make it look like, I mean, like, you know, it probably looks a little too much like Diet Coke. We try to perfect our fake mix more and more with each film and prevent them from all just looking like Diet Coke, which is probably usually what I'm actually drinking in scenes.
So let's go back to Lloyd and his high school career as a teacher.
Got it.
He's sitting in class. He announces new club.
Yeah, that goes over well.
Yeah, nobody cares.
Yeah.
A new student comes to class. And he finally shows up for the club.
Uh-huh.
And Lloyd doesn't even know his name.
Yeah. Lloyd's a bit, he's not the most, he's a bit of an ineffective teacher up to that point. And at least he cops to that. Is that because he's just kind of coasting through. And not really engaging with anyone. And part of it is, you know, it's that defense mechanism where if you go out into the world and you assume that the world doesn't want to engage with you, then you're not going to engage with them either. It's almost like trying to, like, you know, cast the first stone or whatnot. It's like, well, if you guys don't want anything to do with me, that's fine. I don't want anything to do with you either kind of attitude. So he didn't really get to know his students that well up to that point because why bother? But now when he starts that club, it's his, like, you know, little efforts to actually finally start engaging with his students and being an effective teacher for a change.
I thought it was kind of funny when he starts to paint. He puts the help, I think it's on the sign, when he just paints. Right there alone, told me, you can't paint. That gave it away for me.
When he's
attempting to paint, I couldn't stop laughing. I'm like, nope, you can't paint, buddy.
So you could tell then that he wasn't the true artist in the movie?
Yes, I think that kind of gave it away.
Damn it.
Sorry.
Drew. No, I'm just kidding. I can live with that. I can live with that.
I'm just like, Bust. You're here to have fun. We're having fun.
No, this is great.
How was working with Maggie?
No, too. This is fun. Sorry, go ahead.
How was working with Maggie?
Working with Maggie was a lot of... So I scheduled that... All the stuff with Maggie was the first few days of the movie.
Really?
I'm like, you know what? Like, I wanted to... I'm like, it's going to be a little tough, a challenge working with... I think she was four at the time. Three? Anyway, she's about to turn... I think she's about to turn four. Isabella Hort. Super sweet, super smart little girl. And I just kind of wanted to go ahead and I knew that'd be challenging stuff to get. So I'm like, let's do this at the beginning of the shoot. And it was fun. Like a lot of it was just kind of like trying to find the right balance of, you know, corralling her and having her say certain lines I needed her to say and do certain things I needed her to do but also being smart enough to know that sometimes I just had to ride the wave with her. Because there were certain, because at the end of the day, it's kind of like a good lesson that I took with me throughout the rest of the movie too, is I just wanted all the performances ultimately to be authentic. Basically, any moments that I feel like, you know, that feel overtly like forced to me, I just try to cut them out of the movie. And so with her, I was like, okay, instead of trying to like, you know, make her say this thing or do this certain thing, let me take what she's actually doing instinctively and try to incorporate it. Or there are certain things that we had her do that, you know, just because, you know, she was a 3-year-old girl, 4-year-old girl, and getting a little fussy and tired sometimes, understandably, you know, that I would just kind of try to roll with it and just make it work. Whatever she was giving me, for the most part, I would just try to make it work for the movie. But yeah, she was great. So remember, she came into her audition. She came into her audition when she was 3, totally off book, very natural, and she was just, yeah, she was a lot of fun.
So since you're here, we're starting to discuss auditioning. Let's discuss the audition process.
Okay.
Who's Lloyd? Where's he come from?
Lloyd. That's funny. Lloyd and Drew Smith, and he and his daughter were just staying at my fiance in our home, which is where I am now, a few days ago. His daughter's actually getting ready to go to college, and they're checking out colleges out here. So they crashed with us for a few days. So that was fun. Anyway, Drew's a good friend of mine. I met him 10 years ago through another movie we made called Daylight Fades. Met him during that shoot. I told him during that shoot at one point, I'm like, I'm going to write a movie for us to be the co-leads in, to star in together. And I guess he told me like later on that he didn't, you know, he took it with a grain of salt, me saying that. And so he's like, oh yeah, his attitude was like, yeah, that sounds nice, but we'll see. Because I guess people say that kind of stuff a lot.
They do.
But then I went home and did it. And so I just came up with this movie that, yeah, again, was coming from a place. Like, I remember it was after that shoot. Anyway, I started kind of going through a little funk, and that's where this movie came from. But yeah, Drew's a good friend who I met through casting for Daylight Fades and wrote the part for him.
Lisa?
Lisa is Alexis Sterling. I met her through casting out here in Los Angeles. I'd acted with her in a short film a couple years prior, and then she just happened to submit when I put the casting posts. So I was like, oh yeah, Alexis, she was great to work with. Brought her in to read. She killed it. So yeah.
Okay, let's stop there for a second. You've already worked with Alexis.
Yeah.
Do you really feel you need her to read? Don't you know what she's going to bring since you've already worked with her?
Well, I hadn't worked with her that extensively. And also, there are certain friends, I just remember she was, you know, she was good and she's really cool and fun to work with. But there are certain, even friends of mine who I've worked with before, I've had them read for other parts. Sometimes it's just to see, like, because there's a lot of instances where I write parts for people. And each kind of movie is a mixture of me writing for certain people and then bringing in, you know, either it's, you know, new blood for me at least for the other roles or considering other friends for those roles. But anyway, so sometimes, especially in the past more so, like I just want to be able to make sure that their natural energy and what they're bringing to things kind of fit the character. Because sometimes you know that they're a really solid actor and you like working with them, but at the same time, you know, there's just certain things you just want to make sure that they fit the mold for whatever certain specific parts. So, yeah. A good question. Good point.
How about Hipster Jasper?
What's up?
Hipster Jasper.
Hipster Jasper. That's one of my best friends. That's Gabe Arredondo. I met Gabe 12 years ago now. We used to work at a restaurant together. And then in 2000, and we became like really close friends. And then in 2010, we produced a play together that I wrote called Dudes Do Stuff. And so that was our first collaboration. And so then being awesome when that came around, I felt like he was the right guy for the job for producing it. And actually he was, there was someone else who was going to be in the role of Jasper, but then he wound up not being able to make it out for the shoot, blah, blah, blah. And Gabe was originally going to have a different role, the bartender. Anyway, I gave to Jasper at the last minute.
Oh, he probably liked that.
Cookies was born. Cookies. Yeah, there you go.
You'll be talking about this for years. And we also go to Teddy's girlfriend. I'm sorry, I cannot remember her name off the top of my head.
Oh, that's okay. Hayden Blaine. Yeah, I met her through – I never worked with her before. Met her through casting. And, yeah, she came in audition, callbacks, final callbacks. She was awesome. Great to work with.
before we go on anymore, I just have to go one back question to the moon. Just reminded me. Being a hairdresser, why didn't she just open up in her home to save the overhead? I really did think about during the film.
You know, I don't know if I have a good answer to that. Maybe she should have considered. Maybe she does eventually consider that. Because no, you're right. I'm sure if she thought about her plan a little bit more. But maybe at first, I'm trying to now go back and remember what my logic was. If there was any.
Probably
but, yeah,
not.
At first, you know, she wanted to keep things, I don't know, separate, have her own little storefront. Just the idea, at least, of having one's business out there in the world. You should have been there, you know. You should have been there from the process early on. It would have saved me a lot, you know.
Yeah, that cookie shop, he would have been gone. No, I just think my answer would have been, for storyline purposes, Teddy's helping her financially out.
Right.
And that kind of ties them in together a bit more, and that propels the story to the end.
Yes.
Is that one scene. Yeah. So if she has an at-home hair salon, she probably doesn't need Teddy's help. Maybe the story goes a different way.
Right.
There's my actual answer I would have given.
I was thinking, yes. Yes, I knew there was some sort of master plan at play. Thank you.
I know you're good at it.
Thank you for illuminating it.
Okay, I even watched your catering credits. You have a lot of caterers here.
Yeah.
So, why do you have so many?
Probably because a lot of those people and companies were just graciously contributing food to the production. So we kind of wind up, just piecemealing over the course of the movie. It's like, okay, who can kind of come in and help us out? You know, some stuff we had to, you know, God forbid, pay for. But some stuff was graciously donated. So you wind up just kind of cobbling together. You can't keep, when you're getting food essentially for free in exchange for, like, you know, advertising or a mention in the credits, you know, you don't want to keep going back to the same person over and over again and abusing their kindness. So it wind up being a bunch of different people.
So I guess my question is, you had no catering budget, is what I'm understanding here?
No. I don't think we really had much. I mean, for instance, with the budget, like, so the movie was shot in 18 days, but when we started production, I had 20 days on the schedule. And then a few days into production, I was like, oh, we don't really have much more money. So I was like, well, one easy way to save a little bit is to cut, you know, because obviously every shooting day is money. So I wound up cutting 2 days during the course of production. But it all worked out. And, you know, we made it just by the hair of our, you know, yeah, by the skin of our teeth, we got across the finish line. But yes, catering budget, we didn't really have much of a budget for anything. So, yeah.
So you're a writer, actor, director, all at the same time.
Correct.
The first day on script, somebody does a line, you're like, nope, that's not working for me. You didn't read the line. Do you give them line readings or just...
Oh, absolutely not. No, I was actually talking to Gabe about this the other day. He just worked with a director who did give line readings. And... No, I have a hard. I don't do line readings for actors. Well, one, as an actor too, like, and some actors don't mind it, but I don't know. I just think it's a very ineffective way to try to get what you want. Essentially, like, I'm more interested in talking to the actors about, again, like, what's going on with their characters, like, psychologically right then, how they're feeling, and just kind of coming from that place and trying to make sure that they're understanding. If I feel like I'm not quote unquote, like, you know, getting what I want from a certain line or a certain scene or what have you, then it's more of a discussion about the character and where they are in the scene and, you know, where they are, you know, the movie at large, as opposed to, like, I don't know, line readings, it just feels lazy to me.
I agree. I'm just asking.
Yeah.
I like to put you on the
spot. No, I just have a strict no line readings policy.
So being the director, so you're watching a scene unfold and you're in the scene at the same time.
Right.
Are you self-conscious of yourself more than anyone else?
No, I mean, really, what I've, and the more I've done it too, it's kind of, when it's working, then I'm just in the scene. It's when something is not working, so to speak, that I get kind of taken out of it. And then usually if I get taken out of it, I'll be like, oh, hold up, let's maybe go back. And then I take it back and we dive back in the scene. And then, you know, afterwards, so basically that's when it's working and going well, then we get the take and that's it. And sometimes I'll do one more just to see where else it could go. Well, I feel like something is off. That's when I become self-conscious and get taken out of it. And then I stop and we back it up. Or I make a note of it so we can finish getting through the take, at least for their sake. And then I address it on the next time through. So when it's flowing, like, no, you're just kind of in it and just riding that wave.
Okay. Now, I do want to discuss the last song in the film, which is my favorite song. So, where did that song come from? I think it works so well for the film. Absolutely perfect.
Thank you. It came from a great musician named Craig Davis. He had never scored a movie before. He did a really cool job. It was a lot of fun working with him. He's a local musician I met through our co-producer, Lou Griffith. Yeah, that was a really cool collaboration, too. Again, kind of what I said about earlier, just telling him certain themes that I needed for each character, for each scene, what have you. And he gave me all these great songs. It was like having a toy box. And then I went through and just kind of like put the songs where I felt like they needed to be throughout the movie, which was a lot of fun. So it's like having these great songs to work with, and I just kind of like fit them where, you know, it was cool. I loved that process. And with that closing credits song, it was actually – he'd written a, it was a process. He'd written a few others before. He's like, what about this one? What about this one? What about this one? And they were all great, but for various reasons, I felt like they weren't working for the close. I mean, you know, you're making a big statement with that closing credits song. So we just kept talking about it and talking about it. And then he wound up writing, Love to Be Alive. And I was like, perfect. And then once he like had homed in on what we were going for, then it's just like minor tweaks from there. But yeah. So that's where that came from. I'm glad you love that song. I love that song, too.
Did you show him the film beforehand, or he just wrote it from what notes you gave him?
He wrote it from what notes I gave him. Yeah.
Well, that's really good, then, because it's perfect. Like, absolutely perfect for the end movie.
Cool. Thanks, man. Well, he's great. Craig Davis, awesome musician. Great guy.
Okay, so your film is done. You've edited it, packaged it, whatever you're going to do with it.
Right.
What do you do with it next? Do you send it to the film festivals? Do you show it your friends and family? Do you go back to Memphis and show it?
Yeah, well, our first screening was to go back to Memphis and show it to friends and family and cast and crew out there. And then we had our official premiere after that was at the Indie Memphis Film Festival. And then from there, yeah, we played at a few other festivals, and we were fortunate enough to, you know, get the word out there more. And like Dance with the Films in Los Angeles become one of our favorite festivals. We screened there 3 times now. And they're awesome. So yeah, you do festivals, then we talk to different, you know, sales reps and whatnot, and you just try to figure out the best for distribution in terms of distribution, just the best situation for the movie. So then eventually we wound up releasing it through our sales rep, Sam O'Brien, with Oration Films, set up a deal with Ammo Contents. We set up a deal with Flix Premiere in the UK. And then Ammo Content for domestic. So, but yeah, it was kind of a process of doing the festival run and then just kind of like figuring out the best home for it and talking to various people. It kind of took a little while to, because we're very precious, you know, we don't want to just like give it away, so to speak, to just anyone or just sign a deal with just anyone, because we worked so hard on it for so long. We want to make sure we're setting ourselves up and the movie up to be able to connect with as many people as possible. So, yeah. But I tell you, man, like with that, when it comes to that end of things, we're just constantly figuring it out as we go with like with each new film too. Because, I mean, you know, like every year, it's, you know, the model's always shifting, and there's just always different avenues for getting movies out there, which I think is great. And I love. Someone was asking me. I was at a friend's screening a couple days ago. They're asking me, "Hey, what do we do with the movie now?" And it's an exciting. It's a very exciting time. It can also be a little confusing as well, because there are some different ways you can go. But again, ultimately, I think that's a really good thing. So, but yeah, we're just always trying to figure it out and just, yeah, best situation possible for each film.
This may be a question that's very LA specific. Because you live in LA, do you think it's easier to distribute a film as opposed to somebody that lives in Canada?
I don't think so. Personally, I don't think so. You know, because ultimately, at the end of the day, there would be people that, no, you can send your Vimeo link and password, you know, from wherever you are. So when it comes to distribution, I mean, maybe sometimes being able to, like, of course, like meeting certain people at screenings or what have you can always be nice, but I don't think, I personally would say I don't think it makes it any easier for distribution out here.
Okay. It's time for some fun questions for you, because I know you've prepped for these. Lots of prep.
What's that?
Lots of prep you've done for these.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Of course.
Favorite hours. Film?
What's that?
Your favorite film?
Ooh, my favorite film. Ooh, this is a good one. Man, this is a tough one, too. All right, can I say 3?
Yes.
Okay. I would say Almost Famous, Boyhood, and The End of the Tour.
I don't know what End of the Tour is. The first two I've seen.
Check out The End of the Tour. It's Jason Segel and Jesse Eisenberg are in it. It's about David Foster Wallace.
Oh, I have seen it.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Sorry, I forgot the name of it. When you said David Foster Wallace, I'm like, yes, I have seen the film.
Yeah, that's one that, you know, there's certain movies that just stick with you, and it's one that you just, those movies that you find yourself just naturally, like, recommending to people, like, over the years, and that one just kind of keeps coming up for me. And a lot of people haven't seen it, so, you know, it's kind of a, yeah, I can't stop thinking about that movie, so. Those would be, if I had to say my three, it's The End of the Tour, Boyhood, Almost Famous.
And I guess I'm going to do a follow-up question to that. Do you feel you get that question a lot because you're a director? They ask you what films you like?
Sure. I mean, I think I get that question. I mean, I just love talking about films. And, of course, like, I love talking about films that I'm really passionate about. So, yeah, I probably get that question quite a bit over time. But, like, I'm good with that. Like, I like that question. Because, again, anything that gets me, like, you know, able to, like, recommend movies to people, cool. Works for me.
Your favorite sport?
You know, honestly, like, by default, I would say basketball. That's really the only sport that I played for a while when I was a kid. I was always very artistic and creative, and I didn't really start playing any sports until I was, like, 9, and then it was basketball. And I really enjoyed that for a few years. But then I played high school ball for a year, but then literally, like, during practice, I'd be on the court and just thinking about the script that I was working on at home. So that's where my head was. That's where my heart was. So I'm like, why am I even here right now? So I pretty much quit basketball after that and then just, yeah, put all my energy towards filmmaking.
And your favorite food?
Favorite food? I mean, you got to go with, I mean, it's pizza.
Not you donut? Know? Not
that's the most obvious answer, and that's even the answer that my 12-year-old nephew gave the other day when someone asked that question. But you can't go wrong with pizza. I'm going to have to say pizza.
I thought it would be Jasper's Cookies would be my personal favorite one to go to.
Touche.
Sorry, that just made me laugh again.
Those damn cookies will haunt me.
Tell everybody where they can find your film.
They can find Being Awesome on Amazon. If you have an Amazon Prime membership, you can stream that puppy for free. And you can also currently find it on Vudu. And those are in the States, those are the two platforms it's on right now, and we're hoping to release it on a few more over the course of the year.
Is there a way to purchase the film on DVD?
There's not right now. That's something that maybe, yeah, I would love to have a DVD of all of our stuff. Like, you know, again, like these days, DVD's kind of a little bit at least going by the wayside, but I love a good DVD, and it'd be great to have that on my shelf and on the shelves of others, of course. So hopefully in the future. But yeah, right now it's just available on Amazon and Vudu.
Well, thank you for your time. I hope you had fun. Have a great day.
I had a blast. Thank you so much for having
me. Bye-bye.
All right, man. Glad you said it. Bye.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.